live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruto. On today's show, new Medicare card scams. The New York Statewide Senior Action Council is warning seniors about the latest scam and will tell you what to watch out for. Purple Mountain Press is the independent publisher specializing in books about New York State's regional history, and it's under new ownership. We'll speak to two of the new owners about the future for New York State history publishing. Indigenous anthropology and sacred stone structures explored at the Frederick Cook Society this weekend. We'll speak to some of the speakers. And Chamber Chats, Kim Stevens from Berkshire Hathaway talks to us about Pocono real estate and her vision. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Russia says top officials are going to Saudi Arabia today. The Kremlin says the Russian officials will meet with U.S. counterparts and talk about the war in Ukraine. NPR's Aya Batraoui says Secretary of State Marco Rubio has arrived in Saudi Arabia.
Rubio is leading a team of White House officials today to Saudi Arabia, where he will meet with Kremlin officials during their time there to discuss ending the war in Ukraine. Now, these talks are ahead of what could be a Trump-Putin summit in Saudi Arabia. Ukraine says they're not part of the talks today, but Ukraine's president is in the UAE right now, and he's expected to head next to Saudi Arabia.
NPR's Aya Batraoui reporting. European leaders have been left out of the talks in Saudi Arabia. They're having their own meeting today in Paris. They fear the U.S. will try to push Ukraine into taking a bad peace deal with Russia. Yesterday, President Trump said Ukraine's president would be involved in negotiations, but he did not elaborate. The nation's governors are gathering in Washington this week. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports this comes as several states have sued the Trump administration over its efforts to reshape the federal government and workforce.
Thousands of government employees, including probationary workers or recent hires, are getting laid off as billionaire Elon Musk tries to cut government spending with his unit, the Department of Government Efficiency. Speaking alongside Musk, President Trump says DOGE has found billions of dollars in waste and fraud, but didn't provide evidence for where those numbers are coming from. The website for DOGE says receipts for, quote, savings are coming over the weekend, but haven't been posted. 14 states sued Trump and Musk for Musk's, quote, unchecked power over the government and its workforce. The White House, for its part, says that Musk is complying with federal laws. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
Meanwhile, some federal workers getting layoff notices are staffers at the Federal Aviation Administration. A union leader who represents some FAA workers says hundreds of probationary employees have been fired at an agency that is already short on air traffic controllers. There have been concerns about short staffing at the FAA after last month's deadly air crash in Washington that killed 67 people. The stock market is closed today for the President's Day holiday. NPR Scott Horsley reports Asian stocks were mixed overnight.
Japan's Nikkei average rose slightly after news Japan's economy grew somewhat faster than expected in the final months of last year. Stocks were also higher in South Korea, while indexes fell in both Hong Kong and Shanghai. Investors in the U.S. will get some updates this week on the health of the housing market. The Commerce Department reports Wednesday on new home construction. That'll be followed on Friday by a realtor's report on sales of existing homes. High prices and high mortgage rates have been a drag on the housing market, which has knock-on effects for appliance and furniture sales. Mortgage rates dipped a little bit last week, but are still hovering just under 6.9%.
NPR's Scott Horsley. It's NPR. Opposition lawmakers in Argentina are threatening to impeach the country's president over his endorsement of what appears to have been a cryptocurrency scam. As NPR's Kerry Kahn reports, the far-right libertarian leader promoted a crypto coin and then withdrew his backing hours after it was launched.
Friday night, President Javier Milei posted on X an endorsement of a new crypto coin called Libra. The currency launched just hours before the president's post promised to strengthen the Argentine economy. Under an hour of Milei's promotion, the coin rose to nearly $5 in value. However, soon it plunged to under a dollar. Saturday, Milei deleted the tweet, denied relation to the coin, and blamed critics for attacking him. Observers say the coin launch is a so-called rug pull, where developers attract investors, then bolt. Milei's crypto move echoes similar steps by President Trump, a close ally. Days before his inauguration, Trump released a namesake coin, which has since plummeted in value. Carrie Kahn, NPR News.
Potent storms in the south over the weekend have killed at least 10 people. One person perished in Georgia. 9 people died in Kentucky, where flash flooding has led to more than 1,000 water rescues. Kentucky's governor says the entire state is affected. The National Weather Service has posted extreme cold warnings for much of the Central Plains this morning. Temperatures are well below zero from Montana to Michigan. Wind chill readings make it feel much colder than that, as far south as Oklahoma. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And we're under a high wind warning in effect until 7 this evening and a cold weather advisory from 10 this evening to noon tomorrow. Wind gusts today 20 to 30 miles with some up to 60 miles an hour. And for that cold weather advisory, very cold wind chills as low as 20 below zero are expected. We'll take a look at the full forecast at the end of today's show. But first, if you're a Medicare recipient and have received a call about replacing your card, it's a scam. The New York State Senior Action Council says there are increased calls from scammers at the beginning of the year. I spoke with Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of the New York State Senior Action Council, about these new scams in the new year.
First of all, scammers target Medicare beneficiaries because Medicare, it costs the taxpayer $60 billion. In scams. So it's a quite lucrative proposition for a scam artist. But, you know, usually, you know, when we start our new year, we always have our new, you know, we always say new year, new you. So, you know, people start, you know, thinking about the new things that they're going to do during the year. So the scam artists basically use that, take advantage of that idea, and then tack on the, well, you're going to get a new card. And I just wanted to let everybody know that nobody, you're not getting a new card. Not this year, not next year, never. You know, Medicare issues one card, and that's what it is. So sometimes, some of the scams are like, they'll say things like, your card is expiring. That's very dangerous because Medicare does not expire. Once you're a beneficiary, it does not expire. So there's no reason to replace your card. They're not going to, sometimes they offer a card with a chip. They'll offer a card, a plastic card. They'll offer a different colored card. And just know that the red, white, and blue paper card is the official Medicare card, and that's the only one that the beneficiaries will be receiving.
And you mentioned these special Medicare cards, special chips, and also that you mentioned that they're not issuing new cards this year or any year. So how can seniors verify they're not being tricked by these fraudulent offers?
Well, the best thing is this. Number one, let's take it by parts. Number one, Medicare will never call you at your home or on your phone number or anything like that. That's the first thing to realize. If anybody calls you and says that they're calling from Medicare, hang up, because Medicare does not call the beneficiaries. That's number one. Number two, the objective of the scam artist is to get your phone number, I mean your Medicare number. And once they get the number, and once you verify the number, because sometimes they already have that number and they're just trying to get you to verify it, then they know that it's a live account, and then they can start charging fraudulent charges that Medicare might pay. Now, Medicare will not pay if you alert them that there are charges on your account that were not performed, or that you didn't, or medical equipment that you didn't order. And how would a person know that there are fraudulent charges on their Medicare account is by reviewing their Medicare statement notices. Their Medicare statement notice arrives every 3 months. If you have a Medicare.gov account, a My Medicare account, you will be able to see it more often. But the idea is that anything that has been charged to your account should appear on your Medicare statement notice. And if you look at it and you see that either a doctor, you know, doesn't seem familiar, or the date that they're charging that you might have gone to get a procedure, or you didn't receive the procedure at all, or that there are there's back braces or other things that you did not order, and they're on your account, then you know that somebody has access to your Medicare number. So in that case, if your Medicare number is compromised, you could call us at 1-800-333-4374. We're the Senior Medicare Patrol, and we can help rectify all of these circumstances.
Are there some common tactics that scammers use when they're trying to impersonate someone from Medicare or get personal information from seniors?
Yes. Well, sometimes, like I was saying before, because all of our information seems to be out on the dark web, let's say. So what these scam artists do is they comb the different information online, and then they try to piece together people's information. So they may call you up and say, oh, I'm calling from Medicare, and I just want to verify your address. And then, you know, and people will say, well, they knew my address, they knew my doctor's name, they had my Medicare number, so I assumed they were from Medicare. And obviously, you know, if somebody has all of your information, you might think that. But what they're trying to do is verify that all of this information is correct, so that then they're able to charge your Medicare account. Another thing that they might do is we had one case where somebody called saying that they were from the doctor's office. And they claimed that the doctor had a new database system, and they were just trying to verify that everything was correct. And again, they had all of this person's information, which they repeated to the beneficiary. And once she verified it, and then she happened to call the doctor's office later, and there was no, you know, they hadn't called her. Your doctor, Medicare, everybody already has your number, so there's no reason for them to call you to verify it again.
And we mentioned, you know, and we've talked about this before, because it's important that we let folks know about these scams, which are consistent, about tips for folks, but also for caregivers and family members. How can they protect their loved ones against Medicare fraud?
Well, absolutely. So one thing is this, sometimes they might get texts and texts asking or emails asking them to click on a link. Those are all, you know, people trying to get information. If once you click on a link, then they will have access to everything that's in your computer or on your phone, all your contact information, anything that you might be storing on these devices. So we always say, so don't trust anyone with any type of information like this. You should guard your card, treat it as if it was a credit card. Usually, if you're going to a doctor that already has your information, you don't really need to take your Medicare card with you, because it might get lost or something, because they have all of your information. I would always say trust the people that know you personally. So, if somebody calls offering a back brace, right, the only person who should be who should be prescribing a back brace is the person, is the doctor that knows you personally, that can take your measurements in person. That, you know, because what happens then is if somebody does this fraudulently and you don't report it to Medicare on the day that you actually need the back brace, let's say, Medicare will not pay because they think that they've already paid for one.
You mentioned how scammers are using the internet, adapting their strategies with digital communications to piece together information. Are there other new trends that seniors should be aware of in 2025?
Yes. Well, as we know, artificial intelligence is taking over, and it's taking over the news, and it's taking over our consciousness right now. So many times we have to make sure to ensure that, number one, that you don't say the word yes. You know, somebody calls you and says, and they say, is this Mrs. X? And you say yes. They might be isolating your voice and then using it to say that you have approved of many other charges. So we have to be careful who we speak with, which is why we always say if we don't know who's calling us, we should not pick up the phone. We should always call back and call the numbers that we know.
And before we go, let's remind folks again about how important it is to keep your Medicare and Social Security numbers private, the steps to protect that sensitive information, and what to do if you get one of those unexpected calls or texts or emails asking for personal information.
Yes. So I would just say, verify unknown or suspicious callers. If you're unsure if a call is legitimate, hang up and call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE, or you could call the Senior Medicare Patrol Fraud Helpline, which is 800-333-4374. I would say don't trust any phone number provided by the caller. Always call the number that you know, because if somebody that you don't know is giving you a phone number to call back, you're basically calling back the scammer with all of your information. Don't engage. A lot of people like to say, oh, I'm gonna give them a piece of my mind, or I just want to play with them and see if I could outsmart them. These are professionals. The same way that you and I wake up every morning to work and to do productive things, these people are waking up every morning to see how they're going to defraud us. So if you get any unexpected calls, texts, or emails asking you for personal information, just hang up, delete the message immediately. Do not provide any personal details to anybody that you don't know. Another thing is guard the card, like I said before. Treat Medicare and Social Security numbers like a credit card. You know, keep them private and secure. If Medicare fraud is suspected, report it again to the Senior Medicare Patrol or to Medicare.gov. You know, we have trained counselors to help educate Medicare beneficiaries in the fight against healthcare fraud. We're contracted by the government to help with this. So we're waiting for anybody who needs assistance to call us, and we're happy to help.
That's Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of New York Statewide Senior Action Council. Thank you so much, Maria, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Indigenous anthropology and sacred stone structures. We'll tell you more after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll visit Tiki Gardens on Florida's West Coast. Also, the exotic sounds of the Hilo High Flyers and Arthur Lyman. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, episode 2 of our new series, Hombre, Understanding Latino Men. We hear from two Latino voters with opposite political views on what informed their votes.
We are all different in our own manners, right? Mexican Americans are going to be so much more different than Cuban American.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Frederick Cook Society is delving into indigenous anthropology and the significance of sacred stone structures in the Catskill Mountains and beyond this Sunday at the Sullivan County Museum. Attendees will hear from three distinguished speakers, Glenn Kreisberg, Carol Smith, and Ryan Mitro, who will explore the history, cultural relevance, and preservation efforts surrounding these sacred landscapes. Two of those speakers are with us now, Glenn Kreisberg joining us on the phone and Carol Smith in the studio. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Glenn, let me ask you first. You have this research into these Native American stone structures in the Catskills in Northeast America. I don't think many people know about them. Can you talk to us a little bit about what these stone structures are and where you found them and what sparked your interest in this topic?
Sure. Well, anybody who goes walking in the woods in our region, in the Catskills, and observes closely what they see is going to find unusual stone features and structures. And many of them, of course, are colonial or early American. And that's part of the problem is everything gets put into that bucket, archaeologically speaking. But, you know, there's a survey that was done in the late 1800s as part of the 1880 U.S. Census that found over 240,000 miles of stone walls constructed in the woods of the Northeast. So if you think about that, that's a lot of stone walls. That's enough to wrap around the earth 10 times or to go to the moon. And that amount of stonework could simply not have been constructed in the amount of time that Europeans were here. So, you know, intuitively, we know that there were many of these that already pre-existed before the Europeans arrived. And what they are, and this has been recognized by the United Southern and Eastern Tribes, are stone piles, what are known as cairns, or in Algonquin, Manitou Hanasesh, which is spirit stones, stone walls, unusual boulders that have been set up in a particular way. And again, anybody who goes walking in the woods, they're going to see things that are old and made of stone, very common, you know, cellar holes and walls that go along farmers' fields and things like that, very common. But digging a little deeper and understanding from the local indigenous knowledge and working with local and federally recognized tribes, there are these stone constructions that they are responsible for going back thousands of years. The way I got interested in this, as a young adult, I worked at an antiquity bookstore that sold books about Native American folklore and Arthurian legend and cultural mythology from around the world. So I started reading a lot about things like that, and a group named NERA, the New England Antiquities Research Association, came to my attention when I was on a cell tower siting committee, and people in the neighborhood of where the tower was going were concerned about these stone piles in their woods that might get disturbed. And the traditional the academic or, you know, historians basically dismissed them and said, no, these are all early American or colonial. But this group, NERA, they said, no, some of these, in fact, might be much more ancient and much more significant as far as cultural resources. So that really got me going. And I said, wow, we got this mystery right in our own woods that is kind of controversial and nobody can quite get a handle on. And that's when I started taking an approach to recording their locations and their features and building a database to help study them.
And writing a book, Spirits in Stone, The Secrets of Megalithic America. Carol Smith is here. She's the director of the Frederick Cook Society, which is hosting this event. Now, Dr. Cook, famous local explorer, we know him as, but he worked in anthropology as well. Talk a little bit about that study that he had, his study of indigenous cultures.
Yes, I think that's what got me interested. The
lot of people don't know that Frederick Cook researched indigenous culture in Tierra del Fuego and also in Greenland. He wrote papers and he studied them and he measured them, and he was also a physician who analyzed their medical histories, their diets, and he used that research to adapt his own exploration techniques so that he could be successful in the culture of Antarctica and of the North Pole. And he was one of the first early explorers to embrace indigenous culture. So the Cook Society is naturally fascinated by Glenn's work, and that's what drew me to Glenn and what, you know, encouraged me to invite him to come and speak.
And Glenn, do we still have you there? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good. I thought I heard a click. It scares me a little bit when I hear that. So I'm glad you're still with us. But because I wanted to ask you about, you know, recognizing and preserving these sacred sites, how does this better help us understand the history and worldview of the early inhabitants of our region?
Well, you know, I'm not Native American. I don't like to speak for them when it comes to spiritual matters. But what I can say is that there are certain patterns that are really worldwide. For cultures going back into great antiquity. And these elements of the civilization usually are very, their worldview is very three-dimensional. They see a sky world where there are supernatural beings inhabiting the heavens and the celestial world. And they also see an underworld below the surface of the living, where they're also inhabited by spirits and supernatural. So the melding of these three worlds very much is a three-dimensional view of their existence. And again, this is very ubiquitous. If you look at cultures from around the world, this three-dimensional view of the sky world, the underworld, and the plane of the living, and through, we'll call it shamanic practices, they attempt to communicate with those worlds, regulate those types of energies, you know, so it benefits the community.
Could you share a particularly significant or unique stone structure that you've encountered during your research and what made it stand out to you?
Well, let me mention a stone that's on a summit in the Shuangunk Mountains that has both a relationship with another stone, and this would be considered a dolmen, which is a large boulder that's been set up on smaller stones and oriented in a particular fashion. And the one I'm thinking of is we consider it both a compass and a calendar stone in that it has features that are oriented to the cardinal directions, helping with navigation as a compass. But it also has a relationship with another site location, in some cases, you know, nearby, but in this case, almost 18 miles away in the Catskills. And what you have is an alignment with an azimuth that is exactly a winter solstice sunrise, summer solstice sunset alignment. So if you're at one stone looking in the direction of where the other stone is at a particular day of the year, either the longest or the shortest day, you're going to see the sun rise or set on the horizon aligned with that, the two stone constructions. So these are archaeoastronomy features that many of these sites possess. And again, it speaks to the higher knowledge of the people who constructed them.
Wow. Carol, Ryan Mitro is going to be another speaker at the event Sunday at the Sullivan County Museum. He started a nonprofit called Sacred Circle of Stones. What's this nonprofit about?
Yes, well, this is new. Ryan has land, his family land in Fallsburg, and he discovered these archaeological stones on his property that lined up with the solstice. And it fascinated him, and he began to study them. And he has now become an advocate for preservation of these sacred sites that have essentially been ignored up until now. And so these new nonprofit organizations are really working to preserve these sites and to help us acknowledge their presence.
If property owners think that they might have some stones that should be looked at, can they reach out to Ryan and the group to kind of see?
Yes, absolutely. I'm already getting phone calls. It turns out this area, you know, Bethel in particular, there are so many unusual stone structures in Sullivan County, and people call the Sullivan County Historical Society with questions, and often I get those calls. But now we have somebody who can come out and really identify those. So you're welcome to call the museum 845-434-8044 if you would like to speak to Ryan and talk to us about what you have on your property.
Glenn, you've documented hundreds of stone structures in the region, and Harold mentions that, you know, in this particular area of Sullivan County, there are many of them. Are there certain patterns or trends that you notice in the distribution of these stone structures at the sites?
That's a great question. In the Catskills, we very much have them in the watersheds, and it's believed that many of these stone structures might be marking boundaries of watersheds. So, you know, in Woodstock, where I'm from, we've got many hollows. We've got something, Lewis Hollow, Mink Hollow, Bearsville Hollow, Silver Hollow, lots of hollows. Every one of the hollows, there are these Native American ceremonial stone landscapes, and it's because it's where the water gathers. There are springs. There are folds in the bedrock that allow water in the aquifer to feed the springs. They're natural amphitheaters, so many streamheads and waterheads, and basically the source of where the streams and the creeks and the rivers come from. You follow them back to the mountains, and you find these sites marking the locations where these headwaters are.
Carol, let's remind folks about the event and the timing of it and where they can get more information.
Yes, the event is next Sunday, February 23rd at 2 p.m. at the Sullivan County Museum, 265 Main Street in Hurleyville. We'll have bagels and coffee. And if anyone has stones, I know I found a beautiful Lenape stone in our backyard in Youngsville that's 500 years old.
Wow.
And I'm going to bring it. And if you'd like to bring things to share, that's also encouraged.
Well, before we go, I want to just ask both of you, what do you hope folks take away from this presentation this Sunday and just in general, you know, knowing about these?
From the Cook Society, you know, representing Dr. Cook and his embrace of indigenous cultures, I think just wants to kind of help people understand that there was great intelligence and wisdom and things we need to understand about the indigenous population and the curiosity that we should embrace. And I think that's where I'm coming from.
And Glenn?
Preservation, making sure that these are still around for future generations to explore and learn from. And also that credit, you know, credit is due to the people who built these. So they need to be understood in their proper, cultural context. So studying them, understanding them, getting feedback and documenting them in perpetuity so that they are always remembered is you know, paramount.
Yeah, and honoring these great Native American traditions. That's great. We've been talking to Glenn Kreisberg. He's the author of Spirits in Stone, The Secrets of Megalithic America. And we've been speaking with Carol Smith. She's the director of the Frederick Cook Society. They'll both be at the Sullivan County Museum this Sunday, along with Ryan Mitro, to explore the history, cultural relevance, and preservation efforts surrounding the sacred stone structures in the Catskill Mountains and beyond. Thank you guys so much for this event, but also this enlightening conversation. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. That was awesome.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Glenn. We'll take a break, and we're going to stay on history here. We're going to talk to the new owners of the New York publishing book imprint, Purple Mountain Press. That's right after this. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Purple Mountain Press, the beloved independent publisher specializing in books about New York State's regional history, has entered a new chapter under fresh ownership. Four partners with publishing backgrounds, Brett Berry, Rebecca Rigo Berry, Carolyn Bennett, and Lee Hudson, took ownership of the press last month with plans to revitalize and expand PMP's story catalog. Founded in 1973 by Ray and Lonnie Rominger, PMP has been a cornerstone of the Catskills literary scene known for its extensive backlist of books focused on the Catskills, Hudson Valley, Adirondacks, and other key New York regions. Titles have covered a wide range of topics from colonial history to natural environments and folklore. And joining us now are two of the new owners, Brett Berry and Rebecca Rigo Berry. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. And folks who regularly listen to Radio Chatskill will know Brett Berry as the host and producer of Cat's Cast, the Catskills podcast. You may not know that Rebecca Rigo Berry is his wife. Hello.
Yeah.
This is your first time on, Rebecca. Thank you guys for both joining us. What does it mean for you guys to take the reins of Purple Mountain Press after its long history in the Catskills?
Yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, it's been around since 1973, started as a printing shop and then moved more into books in the 1980s. But we've known about Purple Mountain Press for a long time and really important titles about New York history that are important to save and keep in print. And Rebecca, I think, has a kind of a special story about passing the original Purple Mountain Press when we first started coming up to this area. I'll let her tell that.
Yeah,
when I first met Brett in the mid-90s and I started coming up here to visit, we drove through Fleischmann's and I saw the Purple Mountain Press sign. And it was pretty prominent in the middle of town. And because I was just getting out of college and just kind of, I was starting my career in book publishing, and I thought, if I ever live here, I wonder if I could work there. And so it's really funny that it's kind of come full circle.
And you, Rebecca, have a diverse career in both publishing and journalism. How did that journey sort of lead you to become part of this new ownership structure with Purple Mountain Press?
Yeah, well, I do have a little bit of experience in publishing, as does Carolyn Bennett and Lee Hudson, our partners. They probably have more experience than I do in actual publishing and production. But I've been working with books in just various ways since I started working in book publishing and libraries. Yet as a journalist, I've written two books myself. So this is, my life is the written word all around us all the time. And Brett too. And we've become kind of collectors of books. And I mean, I read like crazy. So books in our lives. So I think this is going to be really fun for the two of us. I mean, there's definitely a learning curve involved. We took over the press last month. And, we're just trying to figure it all out at the moment.
Yeah, having just owned it for about a month or so, you probably are still, like you said, trying to figure it out. But do you have some plans in mind already of what you'd like to do and how you'd like to see it going forward?
Yeah, our first step is really just to get a sense of what the press has. So there's 100 and something books on the backlist, and many of those are really important and sought after. So we want to make sure that those stay in print or get reprinted, maybe with updated material. And then we thought we'd wait about a year before we release new books, but every time we meet with our partners, it becomes more and more clear that we want to do this sooner rather than later. So there are a few titles that we're considering already about the Catskills, its history, Native American history, and culture, and some really exciting stuff that's already kind of coming over the transom. So we got to figure out what the priorities are and what we have a budget for and start moving forward. But yeah, slowly but surely introducing new work to this already important catalog.
The press has such a deep and impressive backlist of books that highlight New York State's history. Have you guys talked a little bit about how you honor the past there while you're trying to, make some innovations for future publishing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Brett was just saying, just kind of going through the backlist, there are such impressive names. I mean, Dr. Michael Kudish being one of them, Diane Galusha,
The Tituses, the geologists.
Yeah. I mean, these are people who have been publishing with Purple Mountain Press for decades, and we certainly want to keep that going, keep those relationships, and keep putting just great material out there. And, of course, you know, looking for more of it, because I think, you know, we have a lot of talent here in the Catskills and the Hudson Valley, and we need to capture more of it and you know, keep it going.
And, you know, Brad, we talked about your work with Cat's Cast. Do you plan to maybe integrate, you know, audio production or media into new platforms for Purple Mountain Press?
Yeah, well, I think it was our partner, Carolyn, who said, so how do we turn all these into audiobooks? And I was like, okay, hold on a second.
Give me a minute.
There's a lot. That's pretty time consuming and can be very expensive. So. But yeah, we would love to explore some audiobook options for some of these titles, maybe starting with some of the newer ones. And obviously, you know, working out of an audio studio all my life, that's something we know how to do. So that could be a fun new chapter, no pun intended, to get these books out there to new audiences. Yeah, and I think some of these books would lend themselves really well to audio, and not only narration, but maybe music and natural sounds and that kind of thing. So we'd have to play that by ear a bit.
Can you give us a sneak peek into any specific titles or updates you're particularly excited about?
I can speak very generally because we haven't nailed anything down yet. But as I said, there's a really important book coming up about Native American history and the Catskills that we'd like to publish. There's really interesting books about the history of baseball in this area. There's interesting books about... what else, Rebecca? There was one or two more that were kind of on the cusp there.
I feel like we're just getting our head around the back list.
it was interesting how quickly authors were approaching us, and some of them we already knew and knew that these works were happening, so that's helpful. But yeah, the backlist has been taking up a lot of our time right now, just reorganizing it and figuring out where it's available and where it should be available. And that's been a big part of it.
It sounds like you guys are still like knee deep in it. And you mentioned some,
yeah.
I'm sorry to press you too much there, but in our previous segment, we were talking to a regional author, Glenn Kreisberg, about Native American history, mm-hmm. specifically sacred stone structures in the Catskills and beyond. He mentioned the Silver Hollow there as well. You said you've been approached by authors. Are you looking for people to, you know, approach you? Is it you approaching them? How does it work for you?
So our website currently says we're not accepting submissions at this time, but you know, if someone emails us with an idea, we're not going to ignore it. We'll get back to them and maybe hold on to it for a little bit. It's just, as you said, we're knee deep in it right now, so we're not actively soliciting material. But yeah, so far everyone's been approaching us, and that's been happening a lot quicker than we expected. So that's, raises the pulse a little bit.
was the press in danger of being lost until you guys came in with your partners? Is that what was happening there? And how does it feel to revitalize and keep it going?
Yeah, that's how I would characterize why we got into it. I found out that it was up for sale. The original owner had sold it a few years back, and the owners we purchased it from were moving out of the area and couldn't do it anymore. And so to me, that meant this could all go away. And I wanted to make sure that didn't happen. So I ran out and I said, Rebecca, Purple Mountain Presses might be for sale. What do you think? And she raised her eyebrows. Maybe not in a good way.
Well, we do both have day jobs already, so
let's get a book publishing business going as well.
Yeah, we'll do it in our spare time. Yeah.
So when we found out that Carolyn and Lee were interested in joining us, that really took some of the pressure off, because they they're great partners and they have experience with all kinds of publishing. Going back to some big publishing firms in the city and even some local publications. Lee Hudson and Carolyn Bennett were both involved with the Tri-County Historical Views, which was around in this area for about 5 years or so. And they're both really interested and rooted in Catskills and New York history in many different ways, both very much involved with two of the local museums. So history and books are very important to them. And so spreading the work out among four of us seemed like, okay, this might work. And so I guess we'll get back to you on that, Tim.
given their connection with the museum you mentioned, is there a hope that the press can connect and become more accessible to readers, both locally and globally, I guess, too, through you know museums or libraries or booksellers to reach a broader audience?
Yeah, we definitely see our authors, you know, doing events, and they have been, but even more so doing events in libraries and museums in the area, their books being available in any of the little museum shops or gift shops. For the longest time, actually, most of the books were not available on Amazon, which, you know, is a big question because some people have feelings about Amazon, but, you know, everyone uses it to order things. So it's another place where we feel like we need to have our books. And really, yeah, just bringing the press to a different level of fame in the area, you know, getting people to realize its name and realize that it stands for quality and history and you know, focused on local stuff.
And we're definitely reinvigorating relationships with local booksellers and museums and historical organizations, hoping to have that physical inventory available throughout this region.
Yeah, and on the website, which is nysbooks.com, there's that little carousel at the bottom, which just, you know, scrolls across with just a few of the titles. And when you look at them, the Catskills from Wilderness to Woodstock, the Hudson River Schools of Art and their Ice Age origins, there's such a breadth of history that a lot of people may not know about. And you guys are preserving that and keeping it alive. So thanks for that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Tim. I was working on that carousel last night and scratching my head on how to fix it and modify it. So I'm glad that you saw it, because last night we almost lost that carousel.
Okay, well, it's working. There are a couple of sizing issues, but I'm not going to nitpick.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, Fred's also the webmaster, which is a questionable job for him.
We're hoping to work with a real web person very soon.
Yet another hat. Well, it looks good. And again, it's nysbooks.com. We have been speaking with Brett Berry and Rebecca Rigo Berry, two of the new owners of the Purple Mountain Press, the independent publisher specializing in books about New York State's regional history. And they have joined with Carolyn Bennett and Lee Hudson to become the new owner. So congratulations. And again, thanks for preserving this history, this part of the history that preserves our history, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's we're really excited about it and feel really privileged to take the reins.
And Brett, we'll see you on air next Tuesday then for another CatsCast.
Yeah, I got to go produce one right now, and I'll see you Tuesday.
I'm going to let you go. Thank you both so much.
Thank you,
Tim.
All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, Chamber Chats, our ongoing partnership with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, the National Association of Realtors has been described as somewhere between a monopoly and a mafia.
I take great offense at that characterization.
The NAR was recently sued for conspiring to inflate agent commissions.
It's just hard not to say, man, these prices seem way higher than they need to be.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, Chamber Chats is our ongoing partnership with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos, where we get to meet and learn about business owners in Northeast Pennsylvania. Today, we're talking to Kim Stevens, broker and chief visionary of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Pocono Real Estate. Kim joins us now. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
Hey, I want to ask you about the real estate business, of course, maybe some of the, you know, the home market in Northeast Pennsylvania. But I want to ask you first about something I saw in your bio. You're a certified life coach and advanced yoga instructor. How did you get into real estate, and how do these roles influence your approach to real estate and coaching your team?
Wow, I love that question, because I actually got into yoga and life coaching after I was in real estate. I actually had a health crisis. I had a stage 3 breast cancer back in 2007. And so honestly, it had me reevaluating my life and my health. And I made a few changes, and part of a cancer wellness program was a yoga class that I just fell in love with it and started moving in that direction of health and healing.
Oh, wow. And you're cancer-free now?
Pardon me? Yes, I am.
Well,
ever since then, yes, wow. I am. I'm healthy, and living here in this beautiful area is a big part of it.
Well, that's amazing. I mentioned that your title is broker and chief visionary at Berkshire Hathaway. What is the chief visionary? What does that title mean, and why do you kind of take that title on?
You know, I really believe in strong leadership, and I have always had, you know, visions, or been kind of known for my vision. And so I really took that seriously. And when I, you know, was coming up with my title, I really wanted to adopt that piece of it. You know, I think any organization needs strong leadership with a vision of what they stand for. And so I take that very seriously. And I do get a lot of comments about it too.
Well, you mentioned that you created this healthy mindset for yourself. That philosophy extends into your business and the healthy environment that you create. You've also mentioned, again, going back to your bio, you bring a healthy dose of magic. What does that mean? And how does that influence your leadership style?
You know, what I say is I love the alchemy of structure and magic. And so obviously in any business, there is, some structure that needs to be in the firm or the company. And so I'm all about systems and processes and, you know, a good foundation and all of that. But I think that leaves room for, you know, the magic, the intuition, people's personal style of how they like to do their business. You know, little divine intervention, those kind of things. So, I'm big on that blend, and that between structure and magic, we can really create something unique and remarkable. And we've done that.
You've got deep connections to Lake Wallenpaupack, Northeast Pennsylvania. How is the real estate scene there currently? What's it like? How would you describe it?
Well, so like most places, our inventory is still, you know, kind of on the low side. But honestly, we always like to say that there are opportunities for buyers, sellers, and investors. We really have that mindset that we can find opportunities in any market. So, yeah, well, the inventory is limited. It doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, opportunities for buyers and investors. And while, you know, interest rates are a little high, it doesn't mean that there aren't opportunities for sellers to take advantage of all the gains that they've gotten in the past several years and find the right buyer for their house.
What are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities, I guess, you see for the real estate industry locally in the coming years? And how are you preparing for that?
You know, I really have pretty wholesome or basic view of things. We take very seriously the idea of being trusted real estate advisors for people. So we really represent individuals, and that's really our approach to how we do things. We do real estate reviews with people. We do real estate and lifestyle planning. We take a very long range look at real estate. So we work with people when they're, you know, just trying to buy their first house and get out of renting, to when they need to maybe, you know, upsize because their family's growing, maybe things are going well and they can buy a lake house. We're big on the whole, you know, lake house scene here. And then maybe they have to downsize or sell some investments. So I don't want to dismiss your question about the market, but I really want to kind of articulate our approach to things is with an individual with a long-term plan in mind and with real estate and lifestyle planning.
Well, it's that mindset that you've established for yourself, I guess, that you're bringing into the business, the mindset of growth and balance and wellness. So it makes sense. I think that many people would be surprised to learn that that's something that some real estate agents are looking out for initially, right? That's what you're looking out for. There's the business side, but you're really kind of looking out for that balance.
No question about it. And, you know, something that we do, I'm just going to go back to the magic piece a little bit, is we take wellness seriously in the culture at my firm. And so we have monthly wellness circles because we just think, you know, that is such an important piece of how we can help and guide people, right? If we're trusted real estate advisors, we need to kind of be whole and well ourselves. So it is a piece of the magic that we add into the way we do business and the way, you know, our professionals are, you know, whole themselves.
Well, for anyone that's seen the cutthroat business on Selling Sunset or other reality shows like this, this is refreshing to hear. So I appreciate you mentioning that. And folks can reach you at PoconoMoves.com?
Yes, absolutely. Or PoconoRealEstate.com.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for bringing us your vision and your you know, personal and professional approach to all of that. It's very nice to hear. Healthy dose of magic.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
We've been talking to Kim Stevens, broker and chief visionary at Berkshire Hathaway Home Services and Pocono Real Estate. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that if you go to our website, you can, well, hear this show and all of our locally produced programming, but you can also sign up for our newsletter. It comes out every Friday. If you didn't get it in your inbox Friday, well, sign up. Go to wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, sullivancatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor, catskillbrewery.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On the next Radiolab.
The plane started rotating.
They were going 168 miles an hour.
Whoa.
How a plane crash in Nebraska.
Boom, everything exploded.
And a team of local doctors.
Neurosurgeons.
Urologists.
EMTs. Nurses.
Gave us the modern ER.
First head.
Neat.
Plus, Nebraskans are kind of like that.
One, two, three.
That's on the next Radiolab. Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Kusar Grace, KG, doing African American history during the month of February. Black History Month was originally created to fight ignorance and to prevent the continuation of misconception about black people and their history. So I'll be doing presentations on black history from then until now. So please check me out Tuesday on The Music Emporium.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Let's take a look at the weather. We're going to see these windy conditions throughout the day and into the evening. We are under a high wind advisory until 7 this evening, and then a cold weather advisory in effect from 10 p.m. tonight to noon tomorrow. For the high wind warning, we'll see west winds 20 to 30 miles an hour with gusts up to 60 miles an hour. For the cold weather advisory, very cold wind chills as low as 20 below zero are expected for the region. Now, of course, these damaging winds could blow down trees and power lines. There could be some power outages. Travel could be difficult. especially for higher profile vehicles, the National Weather Service says. And the cold wind chills as low as 20 below zero, of course, could result in hypothermia or frostbite if precautions are not taken. It's best to not travel unless you have to, but use caution when traveling outside, wearing appropriate clothing, hats, and gloves. Tonight's low is near 5 degrees officially, and then tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, high only getting up to 15, and we'll still see those wind gusts over 40 miles an hour.
WJFF Jeffersonville, you're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.